Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and most recently in Boston, Massachusetts. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs in Watson. That's guaranteed. I was on the way in here and I was listening to a business radio show on mortgages, of all things, and there's so many safeguards built into this whole process today and really guarantees for you as the consumer. But above all else, you want to know that you're getting the lowest rate and you're paying the fewest closing costs you possibly can pay, because it's a complex process. It's difficult to understand. There's only one place to go for that, and that's Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700, because it's personalized and it's customized, and we're going to knock your socks off with the service we provide. Check out that low rate guarantee. Certain restrictions obviously apply, but details at our website, huntmortgage.com, excuse me. And don't forget to ask about our pre-purchase commitment. Today's real estate market is very competitive, and you want to make sure that when you are ready to buy a house, you find the house you want. You want to make sure that you can effectively compete with buyers that are going to pay cash. There's only one way to do that if you don't have the cash, and that's through a pre-purchase commitment, because in the eyes of the seller, that has to be viewed as equal to cash, because it is a mortgage commitment, not a pre-qualification, which you often hear about other lenders providing. Ours is an actual mortgage commitment, and there's no risk and no cost to you until such time as you actually close on that house. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline. That's the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property that's listed for sale anywhere in the markets we serve. And all you have to do is dial 716-631-4800. All you need to know is the street number of the house that you're looking at, that you want to know about. No matter whose listing it is, the hotline will then prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one that applies, and you'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property. It's all automatic and just that fast. Anytime in any market we serve, there's nothing else like it. It's faster than turning your computer on and going to the web and looking it up on Zillow or some other place. All you have to do is know the street number and know where the house is, and everything else is done for you, and it's any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's, and you're going to get a link to a dedicated website on that property. Doesn't matter whose listing it is. Only available through Hunt, 631-4800. And we are in a very active real estate market still, although there's signs across the country that houses are taking a little longer to sell. Not so true here. We're still extremely busy. We still have too low an inventory. And just this week, there was an article in the newspaper about this whole issue. And I was asked what I thought about this. And I said, Buffalo's a nice place to be right now. We've had nothing but great press across the whole country. Our housing is still cheap compared to the rest of the country. And even though it might seem to us that are, you know, here a lot, that it's getting more expensive, and everything's getting more expensive, but relative to the rest of the country, it's still a bargain, and we like to make sure that you know that, and in a relative sense. But beyond that, it's just Buffalo gets better and better as a place to be and place to live from a number of standpoints, and I think people are recognizing that everywhere in the country right now. And if you are thinking about selling your home, remember you want to talk to a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent, because they're the ones that can look in the eye and tell you this, that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and we also support the Buffalo Bisons, which is going to be one of the topics of our show today, because in the studio with me today is the president of Rich Baseball Operation, John Dandies. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Peter. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you back. It's been a while since you've been here, John, and I was just thinking this morning as I was driving in that is it not, if I'm not mistaken, 30 years and about 6 months since the stadium opened?
We'll be celebrating our 31st anniversary downtown in opening day.
Great. Well, that's
2019.
That's exciting. So take us through a little history of the team. I know it goes back before then. I think Mr. Rich bought that team probably 10 years before that, something like that?
1985, actually. And then we moved into what was then Pilot Field in 1988. And The rest, as they say, is history.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting to watch how you promote the team and how, you know, it's really become, for all intents and purposes, one of the finest family entertainment venues from a number of standpoints. And I know it's kind of tough. I'm going to ask you about this. Pro teams have players that endure at least for some period of time, but our players are coming and going here. So how do you maintain the link between the team and the players and the community?
Well, part of that challenge is about creating at the ballpark an environment that people want to come to. And I just, to your earlier point, when I wear my Rich Products hat, it is sometimes difficult, certainly less difficult now than in the past, but sometimes difficult to get people to come to Buffalo to work, to recruit people. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you unequivocally that within the past 7 to 10 years, it is now more difficult to get them to leave. and so what's happened is this renaissance that you alluded to is become very real. Buffalo, Western New York, has become a very hot commodity across the country, and we do lots of traveling, and the quality of life, the standard of living here has just become something that the rest of the country is now finding out about. And when I wear my other hat with Visit Buffalo Niagara, the opportunities here, I hope we get to talk about the convention center in a little bit, but the opportunities here for people who want to come and recognize that Western New York is a tremendous place to live has become a national story. And we see it in the New York Times, and we see it in the Wall Street Journal, and we see it in all the trade publications. So it's very much of a factor. And we like to think that minor league baseball is a part of that. And we're very fortunate. But it's all about creating that environment at the ballpark, which is affordable. Mm-hmm. And clean and safe and fun.
And I think that's a key thing. And I think if you look at the momentum and look at how what people are doing in town today, they are having fun. And that's a key thing.
And it's interesting that you say that. I was at the opening last night of a play called Big Fish that is now at the Shea Smith Theater. Right next door to the major Shays Theater, and Mayor Brown happened to be there, and we were talking about the fact that the theater community, along with the Bills and along with the Sabres and certainly the Bisons and everything else that's going on in Western New York, has created a momentum and a sense of a spirit, particularly downtown and throughout Western New York, that's really extraordinary. By the way, Big Fish is opened last night. We hope to critical acclaim, and we'll be playing there for the next 3 weeks. They did a great job.
You know, that's exciting. I read somewhere that we have more live theater in Buffalo than there is in Boston.
There is something like 29 professional theater companies. And the mayor turned to me at one point and said, gee, there's so much talent here. And what I said was that these actors and singers and dancers have figured out that you can go to New York and really try and work hard and end up as a waitress or waiter or bartender or Uber driver. And there's nothing wrong with any of that, except they don't get to do what they love to do, which is sing and act and dance. And they can do that in Western New York, albeit certainly not Broadway, but it's the quality of the productions is every bit as good.
Let's talk about Visit Buffalo Niagara for a second, because Patrick's been on show several times, and we've talked about this. What are the factors that make us attractive and get the buzz and all the articles and all that stuff? And one of the things that happened to me, kind of serendipitously, or whatever the term would be, happened to me on a plane coming back to Buffalo, and I was getting some kind of recognition, and I had to come up with something to say, and I wasn't too sure what to say, and I got on the plane, I ran into a friend, and he said, well, did you see the cover of USA Today? And I said, no, I didn't. And he hands it to me. It was an article about Cincinnati. What they were talking about was, this is 13 years ago, they were talking about the coolness factor. And so I've been doing my own little coolness chart, you know, in my own head about Buffalo. And one of the things that you said earlier is a key factor in the coolness issue, and that is the arts community. And you know, I don't think we can overestimate what the impact of that is on our community, even though it might not, you know, there might be, you know, 100 people at a show like that or 200 people, however many go to a show like that. It's the ripple effect through the community is awesome. And just because of what the mayor said, where do all these talented people come from?
Peter, it's off the chart. And when you begin to think about the programs, for example, at the University of Buffalo or Niagara University or Buffalo State, that's where these kids go to learn their craft, and they end up staying in Western New York to actually do it, to perform. And we're very, very fortunate. And if you do spend some time in other parts of the country, you really understand how unique that is with all of the theater companies that are working very hard. In fact, and I give credit to Michael Murphy at Shays, for example, who's mm-hmm. done a spectacular job in creating not only at the Shays Theater itself, but certainly at the Smith and at 710, there's a revival downtown. And 5 or 7 years ago, these things did not exist.
That's true.
And now they are vibrant, and you could just feel it as you walk through downtown Buffalo. And you see the number of people, the restaurants, and all of the activity that's going on. It's quite extraordinary. And once again, you take a guy like Michael Murphy, who grew up in Western New York, left to go to California for many years, came back, and we're benefiting from that type of expertise and experience. Patrick Kaler, you know, has become a believer. Patrick, of course, is the president of Visit Buffalo Niagara, and I remember when we were interviewing him, and once again, this was a guy that had, you know, a tremendous amount of opportunity across the country, and it was a tough sell, you know, to get him here. He came, and I don't know that, I certainly hope that it's going to take an awful lot to get him to leave, but he's committed.
And he's made a home here.
And he just bought a new house in Orchard Park. So yep. And Patrick's done a tremendous job in making the case across the country for people to come here, not only to visit but to do their conventions and have their meetings here.
And, you know, it's interesting. You use the comment "people on the street." This is it's so vastly different now than it used to be. It's so vastly different. I remember talking to Henry Nowak years ago when we were talking about when it was the rapid transit system had not yet been put in, and his wife Rose was with our company for a long time before she retired, and just a wonderful lady. And we're talking. I had a meeting in Washington. She invited me to Henry's office, and we're talking about Buffalo. And it was a tough time at that point in time. And I asked him. I said, "Well, what do you think this is really going to do for Buffalo?" And he said, "Well, if you were in my shoes, I'm paraphrasing badly now. If you were in my shoes, and you saw that there was transportation funds available, and you could bring them into your community, what would you do?" And I said, "Well, what's it going to do to downtown? I don't know." And so we saw what happened, and now we've turned what was essentially a lemon into lemonade now.
And, you know, we used to make a joke out of walking out of the ballpark, for example, at this time of year, and looking up and down Washington Street, and you'd see no one. You'd see, I mean, it was black, and there would be no people. You know, last night the streets were full of young people. Millennials, if you will, going to the restaurants and going to the shows and just being there. And I think it's a relatively new phenomenon, certainly no longer than, I don't know, 5 or 7 years, Peter, that this thing has happened. And there's no sign of abatement. You know, we continue to, you know, what I'm going to say, the governor continues to spend money downtown. We've had great political leadership, I think. Byron Brown has done a tremendous job in facilitating the growth of that. We've got people coming in from out of town. Doug Jamal and his group at the Seneca Towers done tremendous financial commitment, but a belief that there is the rationale to spend money here because it's the place to be. Canal Side is off the chart, and the medical campuses. Who would have thought? Going down High Street 5 or 7 years ago, that the Oshai Children's Hospital, the UB Medical School, the development at Roswell, Hauptmann Woodward would be thriving the way they are.
In one place.
In one place, bringing quality jobs to town and doing great research. So it really is a different ballgame, excuse the expression.
Well, that's a good expression. One of the things that Mayor's been on the show, and we've talked about this off and on, I believe you were chairman of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership when they engaged in the Buffalo Building Reuse Project. Is that
yes, absolutely correct. Yeah.
And at that point in time, and I still have that study because I refer back to it just to see how we're doing. And I know there's been an update since, but at that time, we were way behind cities like Syracuse in terms of downtown housing.
Yep.
I think they had two or three times as much as we've had. And you've been to Armory Square. It's a pretty vibrant place. Mm-hmm. In Syracuse, but I asked the mayor. I said, "How many new housing units do you think we need and can handle in central business?" This goes back a number of years, and he said 100 to 200. And I know we've blown that away every year. So how important, and you're very close to this, but how important is it in your mind, John, that people live where they work, and that's obviously. Feeds into the maintaining the strength of the central business district. But how important and how do you think we're doing along those lines?
Well, it gets back to the quality of life. There's the sense of critical mass, particularly now downtown, but we're seeing it in all the neighborhoods as well. Mm-hmm. Drive down Seneca Street or drive down Hurdle Avenue in any of the neighborhoods, and you see growth that one would have never thought possible a couple of years ago, and that's because people are beginning to believe that the city itself and the first ring suburbs are growth areas, and there's a quality of life that goes along with that, that speaks to sports, that speaks to education, that speaks to healthcare, that speaks to the arts and the cultural element to all this, and I saw in the paper Mary Roberts over at the Martin House, another project there that's had huge funding. It's a one in a million place, Frank Lloyd Wright, the renovation there that has been a spectacular success. No other place like it on the planet.
That's
another example of that.
Well, let's go back to you just touched briefly on the issue of Visit Buffalo Niagara. And obviously, that begs a question of the convention center and the future of that. And recently, a study came out that was funded by the county, I believe, to help us figure out where to put that thing. What's going on with that?
Well, and I give the county executive Mark Poloncarz all the credit in the world. Excuse me. The opportunity to really take almost an academic look at what the financial implications would be for a new convention center needed to be updated, and when it came back, what we all knew empirically was going to say, which is that if we can build a new convention center, which would make us competitive, you know, in the market, that it will pay for itself, create new jobs, create a vibrancy downtown that our current convention center doesn't allow us to do. So it's almost belies the subject of where to put it. We can argue that one all day, and there are two sites that have been made public, and county executive asked for there to be public input, which is a great idea. It's almost irrelevant to the notion that we need a new building, we need a new site, we need to create a situation where at least where you can get Wi-Fi, you know,
right.
You can get internet and it will pay for itself over time. So the question should be, let's go get the money, whether it's the state of New York or whether it's the federal government or some combination of both. We need to go out and figure that out. The question should not be whether or not we do a new convention center. I think that one has been proven time and time again. I think this was the fifth or sixth study that we've done, independent of the politics, that has demonstrated the need. So I hope that the conversation moves quickly to let's go get the money and figure out how to do it and get it started.
In your mind, John, how important is it for this to be part of a cluster? The ballpark, the hockey arena, the canal side, even HSBC Center.
Sure, we call it the entertainment district. It's mm-hmm. important because it's walking distance, and that's what makes the livability of downtown Buffalo so important, is that you don't necessarily need to have a car. You know, mm-hmm. and the mass transit and FTA, it links all those areas, but you can actually walk them. They're two or three blocks apart, which is what makes the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus so important. Who would have thought that you could go from the medical school to the Oshai Children's Hospital to Buffalo General or Gates Vascular and not walk outside, right?
Exactly.
We look at places like Minneapolis and downtown Cleveland and say, gee, if they figured it out, why can't we? Well, we did. Jody LeMayo is famous for talking about the fact that as Buffalonians, as Western New Yorkers, we need to embrace the fact that we can do those things. Well, we've done them. Now's the time to take advantage of it.
And I couldn't agree more. And this whole thing, going back years, we've been studying this whole issue of walkability, not just in downtown, but in our neighborhoods, et cetera, and how the streetscapes, how important they are to that whole process. And I know there's been a lot of thought and work that's gone into how the streets are being redeveloped around the medical campus, canal side, in front of the ballpark, all around there, so that the flow is better. I mean, we had this notion, as you know, that was, it turns out to be silly, of these one-way streets that went from no place to no place. I mean, it was idiotic. And just bring two-way traffic back, what that's done to the streets and those whole communities.
And let's not forget the fact that the mayor has created over 600 miles of bike paths in the city. I mean, that's some years ago, you'd have to go to Boston and say, gee, we wish we could do that. Or New York City and say, gee, how did they do that? Well, traveling downtown Buffalo and I don't know, with the weather even today, people can be riding their bicycles through the middle of December guys like Justin Booth and Slow Roll and Go Bike Buffalo, been tremendous assets.
And we'll be right back with more with John Dandies after these very important messages.
This is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. The market continues to change from day to day, but one thing that hasn't changed since 1911 is our commitment to serve the needs of Western New York homebuyers. At Hunt Mortgage, we will always work to find our clients the best rate and home financing options available. Rates are rising, and now may be the very best time to buy or refinance your home before these low rates disappear.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com. And look, in the next couple months, it'll be all new yet again. We're redoing the whole site, and we're very excited about that. It's quite a place right now, but it's going to be even better very soon, and it really will make the homeownership and real estate experience a lot easier. And we're continuing to move in that direction so that you have access to everything you need, not just housing that might be available, and there is the most complete inventory of homes available in Buffalo, Niagara, and all across upstate at huntrealestate.com now. But you'll also have access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. And I encourage you to go there today and even stop into Hunt Mortgage, call them at 633-3700, and ask about our many exclusive mortgage programs that make that housing experience that much better and easier, including our Buy the Before and Live the After program, which allows you to take a look at one of these classic older homes that we have in this town and not just look at it as a place that needs a lot of work, but you'll know exactly what you're going to be in for in terms of what you may want to do to that house to bring it up to your standards, so that you can actually buy the before, but you're going to be able to live the after, because all those costs will be rolled right into your mortgage. And it's only available through Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700. And ask about that pre-purchase commitment. Don't forget about that. Or even our warm home loan. Only at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And if you just want to pick up the phone and ask a question about anything relative to real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center at 633-9400. And at that point, we can either answer your question right there, or we can direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring your home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. And stop into one of our many open houses this weekend and maybe around the time of the football game if you can, but stop in there and ask our agents about that seller security plan. We have a very special show for you today. I'm in the studio today with John Dandies. Mr. Dandies is the president of Rich Baseball Operations, and he's also the chairman of the ECMC Foundation. And are you chairman of Visit Buffalo Niagara, too?
Just passed.
Well, you're intimately involved in at any extent. And we've been talking in the first segment, John, about and really appreciate your perspective on all this, the things that are happening, momentum in our city today and in the whole area, for that matter. But before we get into what I want to ask you about, and just we're trying to finish up before the break, we do have a caller in line. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, John. John, you know, it's exciting what's happening in downtown Buffalo. And I remember when the stadium opened, Pilot Field opened, at the time, there was a chance that we had Buffalo had a chance to get a Major League team. And I don't know if you recall, this might be before your time, but I remember growing up in Buffalo in 68, 67, when we almost got a National League franchise instead of us getting it at the last minute. There was some corruption charges regarding the new stadium in Lancaster, and the franchise went to Montreal. But we were very close to getting it back then, and that's pretty exciting. The other thing I wanted to mention, downtown stadiums in Cincinnati, I've gone to a lot of Cincinnati Bills games in Cincinnati, and I've noticed they have two downtown stadiums, baseball and football, and traffic was amazingly easy to get out of the stadium and into the stadium in the downtown area. So I was kind of encouraged by that if Buffalo ever builds a downtown stadium.
Well, I think a couple of answers. I have been, I was around then, and I think history will show that the best thing that could have happened to Buffalo was that we did not get that Major League team. The part of the attraction for what the Bisons do is affordability. And if you go to Toronto or New York or Cincinnati and spend $150 for a ticket and have a $12 beer, and it's just not something that I think this Western New York market would have embraced very, very well, as opposed to what we're doing in downtown Buffalo with the ballpark. So I think ultimately it was a combination of fate and good business sense that we didn't get a major league franchise. Having said that, I think the discussion relative to a downtown football stadium really belies the difficulty. And I know county executives talked about it, and the Pagulas, who've done just a tremendous job downtown with Key Bank Center and, of course, the Marriotts and all of the development that they've done around around Canal Side and the new Labatt mm-hmm. project that they've got going, which will be opening pretty soon. The traffic and the density of what is doable downtown, I think, makes a downtown stadium problematic. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you could have that you can build a stadium downtown without addressing the opportunity to get in and out of mm-hmm. of the area. If that adds a price tag that's probably off the chart, but I think that would have to be consideration if the downtown stadium conversation gets to the point where it becomes very serious.
You know, that's extremely good point. Going to the professional baseball thing, if I recall correctly, there were actually two major thrusts. One was back in the 60s, then there was one in the 80s with Bob Rich Jr. And one of the things that came out of that, among the many good things, and I think what your observation about, that maybe we just were a little over our heads there, was the study that was done at that time, which I found to be remarkable. And it really showed the power of this location in terms of the proximity to the population density. We often, as you know, even in the real estate world, our marketing service area stops at the Niagara River, which is idiotic. And in the study that Bob did, and I'm sure you were involved with that.
Sure.
The circle went way up into Canada, and certainly the Sabres have to do that. But do you know about all that?
Sure. And I think it's one of the you know, you look at the differences in terms of the Canadian approach, for example. They to this moment talk about the central Toronto area, which includes Niagara Falls. You know, there's none of the geographic boundaries and none of the towns. They're all considered part of the greater Toronto area, and they function that way. Mm-hmm. Western New York, and I think the county executive did a study a couple of months ago that talked about school districts. You know, with five school districts in the Cheektowaga area, for example, with all of the costs associated. But some of that is redundant. And I think certainly as we move forward in our future is going to have to deal with that type of redundancy. And at the end of the day, it's a waste of money.
Including the industrial development agencies, which I know you know intimately well.
I do.
I was in Ireland last week, and we met with the Irish Industrial Development Agency, one industrial development agency for the whole country. And it's amazing the quality of the data that they have. And you know that the growth rate in Ireland is going to be over 7% this year? Over 7%. That's going to be more than India, probably more than China this year. And that it's remarkable. And it's because they have one effort. And here we have six, I believe, correct?
That's exactly right. And how often do we get into a conversation about companies wanting to move, you know, to move from one area of Western New York to the other, and there being a competitive fight as to where they should go? It's a silly equation.
And yet we cling to these things. Why do you think that's the case, John? I mean, you've been close to this forever.
I think there's some comfort in doing the same old thing, the same old way. And, you know, we've all heard the quote as well, you know, how you define insanity. Mm-hmm. You know, and you expect a different result. Well, it can't be a different result. And I think particularly, I think with the pressure of those millennials that are now beginning to really populate the workforce, I don't know that there's much patience for that anymore. And I'm certainly one that believes that we need to make those changes. And we're starting to see what the collaboration does. And you need only go to the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus and or Canal Side, for example, and understand that growth would have never occurred if there wasn't a collaborative effort by all of the parties, both public and private, to agree on a goal and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those projects could have never existed 5 or 10 years ago.
You know, you've alluded in your discussion, all through the discussion, about the kind of the spirit and pointed to young people throughout the discussion, and one, directly and indirectly. How do you see an effective transition, generational transition in leadership taking place in our community? I mean, one very obvious one would be as the unfortunate passing of Bob Wilmers and Renee Jones taking over the helm of that bank. And I was watching the international financial news yesterday, and M&T popped up in the discussion. But that's one example. But do you see enough examples around our community of a graceful transition between the generations? So these people, I don't want them to not feel like they're involved. I don't want them to feel like all the old guys are making the decisions.
I don't know if it's certainly, you know, from where I sit, Peter, there's an acceptance of the fact that the guard needs to change, and the pressure and the presence of the University of Buffalo and Buff State and the all of the educational institutions from which many of these people have now, you know, the mantra used to be, you know, you graduate from one of those institutions and first thing you do is leave town.
Yep. Exactly.
Both for people that grew up here or people that came in from other parts of the state and the country. I think there's a growing, and I can speak to the University of Buffalo issue very well, the notion that these kids are going to graduate, these young people are going to graduate, and they're looking to stay here in town. And then I think that pressure for jobs and for living their lifestyles here, you know, has never been better.
And I think this is the thing that will hopefully keep them here in spite of a draw that might happen later on as they actually achieve hopefully the kind of success that we hope they will here in this community that will keep them here. And that's ultimately important to me, so that we can be a multi-generational community, continue to be.
You know, Randy Clark used to say, the chairman of Dunn Tires, you can't sell tires to people who aren't here. You know, and Randy was famous for saying, you know, we need to do stuff. You know, you can't sell houses. I can't sell hot dogs.
No.
To people that
don't live here. They
and
might
so,
buy a house, but we want them to live here.
Exactly.
Anyway, we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these important messages.
This is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. The market continues to change from day to day, but one thing that hasn't changed since 1911 is our commitment to serve the needs of Western New York homebuyers. At Hunt Mortgage, we will always work to find our clients the best rate and home financing options available. Rates are rising, and now may be the very best time to buy or refinance your home before these low rates disappear.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, continuously new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and home ownership experience, and also we're brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, which is the home of the pre-purchase commitment. Call today, 633-3700. We've got about 13 minutes left in our show here today, and I want to get to some important topics with my special guest this morning, John Dandy's the president of Rich Baseball Operations. And one of the things that I wanted to mention to our listeners is that I just returned from Venice, Italy, where I went to the Architecture Biennale. And the reason why I went is that I happened to be on the Dean's Council of the School of Architecture, and we were one of 30 universities from around the world to do an exhibition there, I don't think people in this community have any idea what an honor that is for UB and for everything that's going on in this community. And it's a film that they did, and it was shown publicly at the North Park Theater last week, and I was out of town for it. It's positively amazing. It's not a Chamber of Commerce film. It's nothing that the partnership would say, you know, here it is, this is Buffalo. But it shows the interaction of a truly spectacular school of architecture and various aspects of our community. Have you seen it?
I've not seen it, Peter, but I'm not surprised. You know, I've had the honor of being a member of the University of Buffalo Council for over 20 years, and not coincidentally, President Tripathi gave his State of the University address yesterday, mm-hmm. and we got to see, and the public got to see, all of the things that the University of Buffalo has been doing on a national and international scale, mm-hmm. like the School of Architecture, and it's probably a good segue because I had spent some time with Dr. Tom Quattrocci at ECMC. Working with the Dean of the School of Architecture, Bob Shibley, mm-hmm. On a project that the hospital is about ready to launch, which is the Kensington Heights redevelopment. Mm-hmm. And it is all about the marriage of the professional and academic exercise that the School of Architecture is going to assist the hospital with in determining with the neighborhood what should go into those 16 acres that are landlocked right around on the east side of Buffalo, right around the hospital. But another example of what you're talking about in collaboration between the University of Buffalo and the general community to bring the assets, the extraordinary assets of UB to the community.
We've seen a massive change over those 20 years. I remember when I first got into business here in Buffalo how the dialogue was that there was no communication, that it was there, that all these various institutions were islands. And just like you said, young people would come here to go to school and leave because they could not see the interrelationship between what they were studying and the community around them. And the community wasn't taking advantage of it. The leadership in the business community couldn't figure out how to interact with the university. How has that evolved? I mean, for 20 years, you've seen a lot of evolution.
Well, and part of it is leadership. You know, the president, President Tripathi, has said this is a cornerstone of the success of the university. And so you see that in the School of Architecture and in urban planning. You see it certainly in the medical school, in the dental school. You see it in the School of Management and the internship programs that are going on. You see it in pharmacy and health-related professions. You know, there are 30,000 students and 5,000 faculty members, you know, both in the North Campus and in North Buffalo and on the South Campus that have recognized, because the president has said this is a priority, that integrating what they do in the community is a good thing.
It's a huge
despite
thing.
What happens on Friday nights at the University Heights in neighborhood. And that's a problem. It needs to be addressed. You know, mm-hmm. But the notion that you've got a lot of smart people whose research and whose drive is all about solving these problems and creating new knowledge is going to benefit the Western New York area.
And kids will still be kids, unfortunately, or fortunately.
It's true.
And that's just the way of life. But you mentioned this issue of leadership, and I brought up the issue of the transition of leadership, and you know, it's not one generation to another, as you know, it's steady, and it has to be steady. And Tom's Quattrochi's age, Jody's age versus you know, some of the others that are.
Jody's much older than all of us.
I know he's certainly, but he tries to act like a kid, which is a good thing. But anyway. Going back to the ECMC itself, just give us a little perspective on what's happening now, where it's come from, and where you see it going.
Well, the evolution of ECMC as a center of excellence and a provider of highest quality health care over the years has been nothing short of remarkable, and certainly started with Jody LeMayo and now being led by Dr. Tom Quattrochi and Andy Davis and the staff there that is just extraordinary. ECMC this area is level one trauma center, which means that all of the tough cases, you know, and all of us have had friends and family who have needed to be there, and the institution, because of that type of leadership, has been able to rise to the occasion to create this center of excellent medical care that is not just about, you know, the old sayings about ECMC. You only went there if you were in a car accident, God forbid, or, you know, or got shot. Well, not true anymore, although that is, you know, as a level one trauma center, that's where those cases go. But if you're a kidney transplant patient, as I am and was, that's where you go. If you got an orthopedic issue and you need a knee replacement, it's the Russell J. Salvatore Orthopedic Wing. The whole notion of trauma and ED, that's where other hospitals send their patients. And so they've done a tremendous job in for the community in being that place. And we're just excited about the opportunity for that to continue and grow and for ECMC to take its proper place as a center of excellence for medicine.
Very close friends of ours, their daughter was involved in a terrible accident. And I went to see her shortly after the accident in the trauma center, and I was, you know, it's unbelievable what I saw. And then 10 days later, it was unbelievable, the transition.
Well, we talk about the nursing care. I mean, ECMC nurses.
But back to one thing. Yeah. They point to one doctor's behaviors and one doctor showing up, being called back that saved this kid's life.
Well, man, and that, I'm thrilled to hear that. We hear stories like that all the time. That's the culture. And we're very fortunate, and I'm very fortunate to be allowed to be part of that, and it's going to continue. We've had tremendous leadership, and it will be it will get even better, you know, as we go through our we've got a $55 million capital campaign in play right now. To build a new emergency department trauma center. The campaign is going very well. And people, Western New Yorkers, businesses, individuals, foundations, are embracing the notion that the support for that project is critical, once again, for the quality of life. We hear life-saving stories about ECMC every day. And the quality of the physician care, the quality of the nursing care, and both Tom and Jody have said throughout the years, what makes the difference is our nurses, and we're very fortunate. They make the difference, and we're going to continue and be successful in that campaign, and create once again a state-of-the-art facility for Western New York.
How far along are you in the campaign?
We are, Tom Quattrochi and I have an ongoing disagreement about what the goal is. We've raised over $10 million so far. Tom thinks we're closer to the 12 or 15 that we think we started with, and I'm hoping we're going to get to 20.
So this is a public institution.
Yes.
So you've got a private, but it's a private foundation. Is that correct?
It's what's called a public benefit corporation. So yes.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. How does that work? I mean, I know you're not the only institution that has one of these, but how does that work?
Well, typically the board of directors is responsible for the operation of the hospital. We get no direct support, from government except through, Medicaid and Medicare, and it's the responsibility of the hospital to break even. And the foundation exists, for example, to create opportunities for private funding, at the end of the day, we need to break even on an operations basis, and that's what the challenge is. And of course, on the national level, the healthcare is changing almost by the minute.
If we go back a few years, that always hasn't been the case, though.
That's exactly right.
Breaking even, and I, my compliments to the current leadership and to obviously your leadership to have really turned that around. And I mean, it used to be that, as you know, the reputation of ECMC was, was kind of a place of last resort, not a place of first resort.
And that's what that has changed, and it has become a place where you want to go,
mm-hmm.
where your doctor is now proud to be associated with. And we see that from the young adults, working through medical school and dental school and the pharmacy school and nursing. Mm-hmm. That's where they want to be.
John Dennys, you've been around this community a while, and you've done a lot of things, and you're deeply involved in a lot of things right now. But what's next on Mr. Dandy's horizon?
Oh, I think, and Peter, and thank you, I'm beginning to feel like Chevy Chase or Bill Murray on Saturday Night Live. You and I have shared this microphone for a lot, and I appreciate the fact that Hunt Real Estate, for example, has continued to make Buffalo its home. You could be in a lot of other places, and the fact that you've chosen to keep your headquarters here, I think, should not go unnoticed and unappreciated. It's a big deal. The family that is Hunt, and I can say this personally, is just remarkable. And I think the community owes you and your associates and colleagues another debt of gratitude.
Thank
for
you,
continuing to do the work and make the investments in all of those mortgage opportunities and on the internet should not go unnoticed. And sometimes we take those things for granted, and we shouldn't. So, we'll continue to do what we're doing, and I think is an exciting place to be. It's the change, particularly for those of us who have been around, mm-hmm. who would walk out onto Washington Street 10 years ago and not see anybody, and now, now the issue is where do we park? I find it humorous for people to say, "Gee, parking is now a problem." Well. 5 years ago, parking was not a problem.
Not a problem at all.
And now it's become a challenge. Or the rush hour on the Kensington Expressway. Please, if you've ever been on the Long Island Expressway or in Chicago or L.A. to see a real what real rush hour looks like, it's silly.
It is silly. It's interesting. You mentioned that about parking. We're contemplating moving our administration from the suburbs into the city again.
Does the mayor know that?
I haven't told him yet. I got a few things to work out yet. But the big deal is parking. And I met with one of our great community leaders this week about this very issue and the importance of it. We got talking about the fact that, as you mentioned earlier, people's habits are changing. They don't need a car as much, and we could do a whole other show on that. Unfortunately, we've got to cut this off. But I do want to. And you were very kind to say things you did about me. I want to know about John, but we don't have time even to hear about John's future. But I'll have you back again to discuss
Thank you, Peter.
The mayor's going to be coming on in the next few weeks, too, so we'll be able to hopefully feed off of what you said. But John Dandy's president of Rich Baseball Operations, the chairman of the ECMC Foundation. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Peter.
I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York and all of upstate is Hunt Country.